Well, I think it's important to understand why it was really significant that Wheatley was portrayed as a servant, as a slave, but spoken of as a servant, this being Boston, and it being in the 1770s. The question of ownership was really critical in terms of making it possible for Wheatley to be published. Once she was a freed woman, she was no longer able to publish her poetry. So the fact that she was patronized by her owners and also by some of the morally upright citizens of Boston, as is testified in the not only the preface, but the to the public, the announcement that no less than the governor, Thomas Hutchinson, and other notables in Boston had interrogated her and found that she was authentically the author of her own work. And Henry Louis Gates, Skip Gates, has written wonderfully about this. I would just recommend his work on Wheatley to anybody who wants to pursue the biographical angle in more detail. She had to be interrogated by citizens and found authentic in order to be able to brought to the public, whether it was in Boston, in the colonies, or in England, which was actually where her volume of poems on various subjects, religious and moral, was published. So she was published in Britain before she was published in the colonies in the United States, because she was being patronized by the abolitionist movement. Her volume of verse is dedicated to the Countess of Huntington, who had been a notable abolitionist and patron of other kinds of abolitionist writing. So Wheatley, if you like, is being broadcast on the one hand and also contained on the other, that the portrait that is part of the frontispiece of her volume is actually an oval portrait, and it's encircled with a legend that says Phyllis Wheatley, Negro servant to Mr. John Wheatley of Boston. Now, the very name Phyllis Wheatley signifies slavery. Phyllis was the name of the slave ship that brought her from Senegal to Boston, and Wheatley is her master's family. She was actually assigned to Susanna Wheatley, his wife. She was had a mistress more than she had a master, but the son, Nathaniel, was also instrumental in accompanying her to England, where she went. She met the Countess of Huntington, and her book was brought out. There was a sort of book launch, etc., and all of that happened with Nathaniel, son to John and Susanna Wheatley. So in the portrait, Wheatley sits with her quill pen poised over a page. There's an inkwell. There's a small book. We might wonder about what the book could be. It's tempting to speculate that it's a little book of Alexander Pope's poetry. It doesn't really look like a Bible, although that's another book she has recourse to. It could be an edition of Milton's Paradise Lost. It's really hard to say. It's a small leather-bound book. And she has the quill pen poised in her hand. She's writing verse, and she's looking up with her chin in her other hand. And as you say, she looks pensive. She looks upward for inspiration. She looks upward to authority. She looks pensive, contemplative, not rebellious. But I would say this is deeply ironic, because she's making use of her situation to do any number of very covertly subversive and challenging things. And that's what's really remarkable about her poetry. It's so heavily coded, and it, I would say, appealed to different audiences. There was an audience of freed slaves. There were liberal white abolitionists, and there were others who would have been receptive to her various messages or codes to do with rebellion, to do with liberation, to do with emancipation, to do with critique of slavery, as well as also a defense of colonial independence. There's also a bit of a critique of imperialism in some of her poems.